From Radio Catskills Studios in Liberty, New York, this is The Local Edition, and I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me tonight. Coming up, I don't know if you heard, but the New York Knicks are in the NBA Finals for the first time in almost 30 years. You would assume that Knicks fans are pretty excited, but we here at Radio Catskill can't assume anything. That's why, to find out for sure, Ronald Kelson went out to talk to some local fans, and his report is coming up in the second half of the program. And Sullivan County's Household Hazardous Waste Collection event is this Sunday. Patricio Rubio talks to Cassie Thelman, Sullivan County Recycling Coordinator. Get all the details there. Plus, after a wild final week filled with last-minute votes, New York State's legislative year is over for 2026. What passed, what didn't, and why is this process the way that it is? I talked to WNYC's Jimmy Vielkind, who covers state politics for The Gothamist and the New York Public News Network. We get a New York State legislative wrap-up. We're going to start first with local healthcare news, because Ellenville Regional Hospital has launched a new mobile health care van that will bring preventative care on the road. Radio Catskills' Kimberly Izar is at the ribbon-cutting ceremony on Friday morning and has this story.
On the count of one, two, three.
It was a warm, sunny day on Friday morning when Ellenville Regional Hospital unveiled its new mobile RV clinic to expand healthcare access across Sullivan and Ulster counties.
Today we are doing the ribbon cutting for our HealMobile, which will allow us to project our population health services, wellness services, into our surrounding communities, as well as more intensively here, closer to home.
That's Stephen Kelly. He's the president and CEO of Ellenville Regional Hospital. He joined local officials, healthcare leaders, and health advocates to cut a ceremonious white ribbon to unveil the Heal Mobile Van. Kelly says its population health program is built on four pillars: diet, exercise, risk reduction, and social determinants of health.
And those are insecurities: food insecurity, housing insecurity in rural areas like us, transportation insecurity. And the root of those insecurities is economic insecurity. And we here at Ellenville Regional Hospital have been working on that without realizing it for generations.
The initiative was made possible through a $375,000 grant from the Mother Cabrini Health Foundation. The van will offer preventative health screenings, education, access, and linkages to other healthcare services. Inside the van, it looks like a custom-fitted tiny home. There is a small kitchenette, restroom, even a mirror. But this one has medical supplies and services. There's a blood pressure monitor, personal toiletry bags, and a weight scale.
And there is also some nicotine patches. There's a few on the countertop here, along with some informational flyers about breast cancer, lung cancer, prediabetes, vaping, alcohol and mental health information.
Ulster County Executive Jen Metzger is thrilled about seeing the project come to life. She says preventative health is the key to keeping New Yorkers healthy and safe.
You know, a real challenge in rural communities is transportation, is getting these resources to people. Ellenville, about 18% of the population lacks personal transportation. And I'm sure there's a correlation there with health outcomes. So you are bringing this to them. You are bringing these critical resources to the community. And we're just so grateful and ready to shine a light on you for the rest of this state and country, because this is how healthcare should be done.
Matthew Stubble, medical director of Ellenville Regional Hospital, says a focus on preventative care was intentional.
The numbers are pretty impressive with preventative care. All those different categories, blood pressure, cholesterol, weight, all have like 10, 20% decreases over a five-year period. And the amount of money we spend in this country on people who haven't had preventative care and then have, an emergency, is staggering compared with the amount of money you could spend on preventative care.
Small, affordable screening measures can make a big difference down the road, he says.
These are even more dramatic in stroke. If you reduce your blood pressure, to the recommended 120 to 125, your risk of stroke drops by 30 to 40%.
Stupple says the van is ready to hit the road. You can expect to see the van at libraries, homeless shelters, local events, and even workplaces of underserved residents.
A population we identified right at the outset was the corrections officers and all the people working in our many correctional facilities around here. They work long hours, they're an at-risk population, and they don't have the time to seek this care. So we plan to bring the HealMobile to those facilities, and they can come and get their screening during their lunch breaks or other breaks.
Ellenville Regional Hospital says the mobile van services will be available starting Monday, June 8th. In Ellenville, I'm Kimberly Izar for Radio Catskill.
Thank you, Kimberly Izar, for that report. Well, now we're going to talk about this year's session of the New York State Legislature because that session is now done. Legislators adjourned on Friday night, and they aren't expected to return to Albany until they start next year's session. Here's a reminder of the timing of this year's session. It all started back on January 7th. 1 week later, January 13th, Governor Kathy Hochul gave her State of the State address, unofficially kicking off the budgeting process. And that kickoff got a little more official just 1 week after that with the release of the governor's executive budget on January 20th. Legislators and the governor blew past the budget's April 1st deadline, and the budget was not fully adopted until Wednesday, May 27th. So apart from a couple of weeks in January and a very busy 7 weekdays after the budget passed, New York's entire legislative year was taken up with the budget process. And now, with almost 6 months left on our 2026 calendars, that legislative year is over in Albany. So I'm wondering, what happened legislatively that wasn't part of the budget? What couldn't happen? What didn't pass? And is anyone asking why things work like this in New York State? To find out more, I reached out to WNYC's Jimmy Vielkind. He covers New York government and politics and how it affects people across the state, and he's been covering Albany since 2008. You hear him regularly on Radio Catskill, thanks to the New York Public News Network, and his work appears in The Gothamist. His most recent article is titled, New York Lawmakers Head Home After Least Productive Year of Hochul Era. I spoke to him earlier this afternoon. Jimmy Vielkind, welcome back to the Local Edition.
Hi, how's it going?
It's going well, and I can imagine you've got a little bit more time on your hands now that lawmakers have totally left Albany. And I think your headline and opening sentence in your article say a lot, that they're heading home after the least productive legislative session since the pandemic lockdowns. Like, why is that?
Well, it's a couple of things, Jason. This session year was scheduled to end a little bit early always because lawmakers are really focused on primaries, both Republican and Democratic primaries, that are scheduled to take place on June 23rd. So the plan had always been to leave in this first week of June, which cut things a little bit shorter than they often are. And the second reason was that the state budget, which ended up being passed, and it's filled with $268 billion of all kinds of spending, it ended up running about 8 weeks past the April 1 due date. So because the budget stretched on for so long, Democrats who control the state assembly and Senate said they just didn't have time to really consider a big host of other issues that they normally would in the course of a regular legislative session.
Right. And while there's some legislative decisions, baked into the budget, there's still other legislating that needed to be done. Budget was fully adopted on Wednesday, May 27th. Legislators adjourned on, just on Friday night. So that leaves about, a week and a couple of days that they were able to do what they had to do. What was that last week like?
Well, it was a little frantic. There were some bills that are non-controversial that have to do with things like renaming a highway or reauthorizing a municipality to charge sales taxes. And they can crank through those bills very, very quickly. It's kind of funny to listen to hear these votes called boom, 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 one after the other. But then there were other things that came up that were really, really controversial. And Republicans who were in the legislative minority, when they had a problem with the bill, they knew that they could run out the clock and they could frustrate their colleagues in the Democratic majority and their ability to get more issues done. So it forced the Democrats to be more judicious about what they brought to the floor and what they didn't. At the same time, you had around the Capitol activist groups who were coming for last-minute rallies. There were people pushing to make it easier for municipalities outside of New York City to enact rent control. Their bill was not acted upon. We also saw people who were demonstrating to double the state's bottle deposit and also to enact a law that would try to reduce plastic pollution. They have been at it for years, but once again, their bill was not taken up this year.
Yeah, and I just want to underscore something you said there, because that wasn't anything I was expecting. I figured, you know, again, Republicans are the minority party in New York State, in the New York State legislature. I figure if there's a mad rush to pass legislation, that would only further marginalize them. But it sounds like you're saying that actually gave them a little bit more leverage, if not just cold comfort.
They did have a little bit of leverage, yeah, because there are set limits for the amount of time you can debate a bill. And so just like in a sports match with a set clock, you know, you can basically hold the ball and run it out.
So you just mentioned a couple of things that just didn't get passed. They didn't get to any other notable items that were concerns to some lawmakers or some advocates that just didn't go anywhere?
There were two things that I was watching at the end of the session that both fell by the wayside. The first was a thought that there would be additional regulations on e-bikes. We've seen some high-profile crashes in New York City. They're becoming more and more common on streets around the state. And there was a push which had bipartisan support from some serious lawmakers to perhaps require registration or push for more and greater public education about what's legal and what's not legal with e-bikes. But Assemblymember Bill Magnarelli, a Democrat from Syracuse, told me that, hey, there just wasn't enough time to get this done in a substantive way. He says that he hopes that there will be something that comes up by next January when the legislature comes back. The other has to do with the resale of tickets to concerts and sporting events. Every year, the state has a law that basically legalizes ticket scalping. It legalizes the resale of tickets. And that's, of course, been important in the era of SeatGeek and StubHub, where people expect to be able to sell tickets for kind of above face value. But in renewing that law, some lawmakers, most noticeably James Skoufis, the state senator from Orange County, he was hoping to insert some consumer protections onto the law. He wanted to cap fees and actually forbid the sale of tickets for more than face value. That's a big, meaty policy area. There are lots of concerns and lots of people weighing in. And Carl Hastie, the Speaker of the State Assembly, looked at it. He looked at the clock and he said, we're just not going to tackle this year. We don't have time. And so the law as it currently exists was just extended until 2027.
So what did pass in the final week or so of legislation? Any notable policy things that did get done?
Yeah, there were three things that I think are the highlights of the end of this session. The first was a one-year moratorium on the development of large data centers. There have been concerns from both Republicans and Democrats about the use of power and therefore the impact on energy prices and utility rates for regular people that these data centers have. There were some concerns aired by developers of data centers as well as labor unions, but that bill did pass and it will go to Governor Hochul's desk, where I really don't know if she's going to sign it. The second piece of legislation that I think was pretty significant has to do with what's called surveillance pricing. Lawmakers pushed forward a bill that would prevent companies from using personal data about an individual to set a price tailored to them. This might perhaps let you charge somebody with a higher income a higher price, or someone who you know is desperate and buys these goods all the time a higher price. So business interests and companies argued deeply against this. They say it's going to impact loyalty programs. They say it's going to impact coupons, supporters of the bill said that's nonsense. And so, again, this is a pretty meaty thing that is going to impact the lives and pocketbooks of New Yorkers if it gets signed into law by Governor Hochul, which, again, remains to be seen.
This is the part where I'd like to just get into, like, just reactions from people, not just on what did or didn't get done, but how this process plays out in New York, because I feel like I'm starting to hear some more questions or frustrations, even from lawmakers themselves, even from Speaker Hastie a couple times in this past session. Are you hearing frustration from lawmakers, advocacy groups, or even constituents, either frustration with the legislative session overall, its length in New York State, or the fact that the budget process takes up so much time and oxygen?
Well, Speaker Hastie seems to be frustrated with the way Governor Hochul has approached budget talks. She seems content to stretch them out. I think that the governor has some guilt for that, but, you know, it takes not just two to tango, like Buenos Aires and Albany, it takes three to tango. So if the speaker doesn't like that process, he did have something to say about it. And I think that in the future, he's going to be more assertive in getting that done. But yeah, you often hear frustration from activist groups of all different stripes that there's not enough time in the legislative session. But also, I think we should recognize that there's nothing precluding lawmakers to come back. They could be still at the state capitol this week considering bills and voting on them. They could come back in July. They could come back in September. They can come back at any time that they want. So it's a question of a will, not necessarily a rule or a law against it. And I think that's why members mostly have their frustration tempered, because they know it's within their power to perhaps take action.
You know, one lawmaker you spoke to that touched on this was Assemblymember Josh Jensen, Republican from Monroe County. I just want to play this clip quick.
We're at a place in the last week where we've had to put 100 pounds of policy and bills into a 5-pound period. And, you know, unfortunately, that means that some good public policy that has bipartisan support might not make it over the finish line.
So there you hear him talking about trying to get 100 pounds worth of policy into a 5-pound period of time. But Assemblymember Jensen is somebody that actually mentioned the possibility of coming back before the end of the year, right?
Thought it would be worthwhile. But again, he's a Republican from the Rochester area. That means that he's in the minority, and it's really a decision that he doesn't have a ton of impact on making.
And going back to where we started in the beginning, just talking about how this was the least productive legislative session, one of the ways that you determined that was talking to NYPERG was tracking like how many bills typically get passed. And they were also weighing in on this question of how things are done, right?
Yeah, that's right. It turns out that about 759 bills passed both houses this year. That is lower than last year. It's lower than any year since the 2020, when the COVID-19, really locked down the world in the latter part of the spring. And it's lower than the average number of bills that have passed during Kathy Hochul's tenure as governor, which is 891.
All right. Well, I thank you again for taking the time for talking to us.
Thanks, Jason. Always a pleasure to be with you and your listeners.
WNYC's Jimmy Fielkind covers how New York government and politics affect people across the state. You hear him here regularly on the Local Edition, reporting for the New York Public News Network. And his article is up now at Gothamist.com and WJFFradio.org.
You're listening to the Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
It is the Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole. Coming up, local Knicks fans react to their team being in the playoffs for the first time in 3 decades. But first, there is a Sullivan County event coming up that A, I always look forward to, and B, is very helpful that you know about if you live in Sullivan County, because it's time once again for hazardous waste disposal. That's when Sullivan County residents looking to clean out old paint, pesticides, cleaning chemicals, pool chemicals, batteries, fluorescent bulbs, and other hazardous household materials can dispose of them safely. This particular household hazardous waste collection event is happening Sunday, going from 8 to 2 at the Monticello Transfer Station. For details on what to bring, what to leave behind, and why proper disposal matters, Radio Catskills' Patricio Rubio spoke to Cassie Thelman, Sullivan County Recycling Coordinator.
So we're collecting materials that typically wouldn't go in the regular waste stream, hard to get rid of items like paint, maybe printer ink, pool chemicals, old gasoline, old cleaning products, things like that shouldn't go in your regular waste stream or in the recycling bins. So this is a free event for Sullivan County residents. We're only open for collection of hazardous waste on that day. You can't bring your regular household garbage or recycling, only the acceptable hazardous waste on that day.
Yeah. Let's talk about why is it important that these materials not just be thrown in the regular trash?
Well, our waste in Sullivan County goes to a landfill. So if those kinds of things get in the landfill, they can seep into the soil, into the water, and affect the local residents and wildlife in the area of the landfill. Regular household garbage can be contained at a landfill in the liner of the landfill, but hazardous waste can't always be.
Now, what should residents know before they load the materials into the car? I see the press release said, you know, make sure no things are spilling and things like that.
Yeah, when residents come to our event, they'll remain in their vehicles, and our vendor is going to take the material out of their vehicle for them. So we just want to make sure that they're not exposed to touching any of the chemicals. It should all be sealed shut or put in a box so that it's not spilling or leaking, to protect your own vehicle and for the sake of our vendor as well.
Are there items that people often assume will be accepted at the Monticello Transfer Station, but actually are not?
Yeah, we get a lot of questions about old gasoline, so I do like to push that this is the day. We'll be doing it June 14th, and we'll do it again in the fall, but this is the day to bring those old gasoline, antifreeze, pool chemicals, things like that.
Now, I do know that at my transfer station, when I go, there is a section that folks can put, like, used oil. Most transfer stations have that, right?
Yeah, our 6 county-operated transfer stations do accept used oil. You can bring up to 5 gallons per day. So if you have more than that, you can bring it to the hazardous waste event, but we like to recommend you keep your garage cleaned out throughout the year and just bring it to the station when you can.
And what about electronics or tires or ammunition or medical waste or refrigeration units? They're not accepted at this event that's happening on Sunday, right?
They are not. Most of those items we accept during our regular business hours. So electronics are free of charge for Sullivan County residents. You can drop them off at any of our stations. Same thing with tires. We also take propane tanks. Those are things we take all year round, so we try to avoid taking them during the hazardous waste event. We do accept paint at the hazardous waste event, mm-hmm. but just for those who don't know, we do accept paint all year round at all of our transfer stations as well.
Oh, wow. Is there a cost for that, for the paint on the transfer stations?
No, paint is free for Sullivan County residents to drop off.
All right. You mentioned this one in the fall. So if someone misses this June 14th event, what other options do they have? You mentioned, you know, some things can be taken at the regular transfer stations throughout the county, but also there's an event happening in the fall.
Yeah, if you miss our June 14th event, we're going to be going again on Sunday, September 20th, same time and location.
And just, I want to ask you as far as, like, if you have any updates on us on what's happening with the struggle that all transfer stations have throughout the state. Is the Seneca Falls landfill going to be, will be closing or is closing? How's that whole process going?
So we are luckily, we're past that now with the new year. We are contracted with a different landfill through Casella. We're using their landfills, Chemung and Highland. So Seneca Meadows is still up in the air, and that's why we chose to go a different route. We wanted to make sure we had a somewhat long-term disposal option.
Cassie, is there anything else that we have not touched on you want folks to know?
I don't think so. You did mention to please bring proof of Sullivan County residency. So if you're a property owner in the county and your driver's license doesn't have your Sullivan County address, you can bring your driver's license as well as like a tax bill or a NYSEG bill, something that has your Sullivan County address on it.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point to make, because we have a lot of second home owners here. So, yeah, so you could bring some kind of identification that shows that you do have a property here in Sullivan County. Awesome.
Yes.
We were talking to Cassie Thelman about the Sullivan County Household Hazardous Waste Collection event that's taking place this Sunday on June 14th from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Monticello Transfer Station. Again, residents, like Cassie said, residents should bring proof of Sullivan County residency and remain in their vehicles during drop-off. For more information, you could contact the Sullivan County Recycling Coordinator, Cassie Thelman, through the county's Solid Waste and Recycling Department. So, Cassie, thank you so much for this. I do really appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you so much.
In Liberty, I'm Patricio Roballo for Radio Catskill.
Thank you, Patricio. We do have one more story for you tonight on the Local Edition. The New York Knicks are in the NBA Finals for the first time in almost 30 years. The team's overcome perennial failures to get there, and the fact that they are in the finals is so exciting for their fans. That excitement can be felt all the way up here in our listening area. To hear what local fans are saying about this improbable Knicks run, Radio Catskill's Ronald Kelson went to the source.
It's a Friday at Big Eddie Brewing in Narrowsburg. There are people at the bar, at tables eating, and others sitting on couches around a wall with a projector screen. Their eyes glued to Inside the NBA, the pregame show airing before Game 2 of the 2026 NBA Finals between the New York Knicks and the San Antonio Spurs. The New York Knicks are in the finals for the first time in 27 years. For some context, I wasn't even born yet. During this run, the Knicks disposed of the Atlanta Hawks in round 1 and swept the Philadelphia 76ers and Cleveland Cavaliers in rounds 2 and 3, respectively. Success for the Knicks has been rare, so as you can imagine, fans of the team are trying to soak it all in. You've probably already seen many of the viral videos of Knicks fans down in Manhattan, but what do fans in our listening area feel about the team and this run? I spoke with Bill and Jenny, a couple who live in Narrowsburg, and they say that this Knicks run has been pretty special.
The last couple years has just been great. This team is so likable, and it's kind of unreal. I was too small to remember them winning back then, so this is special. So,
yeah. When I grew up, my dad has been a long-suffering Knicks and Mets fan. So this, and he's getting up there now and everything, and his passion for it has kind of rubbed off on me, and so has Bill's. And I just, you know, it just feels really good for the city. Like, there's been a lot of like tough things this year and the last couple of years, so it's definitely like amping the city up.
Bill says he's been a Knicks fan his whole life, while Jenny says she's only started following the team recently. But both of their earliest memories of the team involve a couple of legendary players.
It was probably Clyde Frazier and Earl the Pearl Monroe. I was kind of aware of them. I was a little more of a baseball fan as a little kid, but I knew they were kind of legendary, and they were still playing, but the Knicks were kind of on the down slide at that point. So I think that's my earliest.
For me, it's Patrick Ewing. Like, that was when I was growing up, that was the guy.
I also spoke with Mike, also from Narrowsburg, who says he can feel the crazy vibes at Madison Square Garden.
I mean, you look at videos on Instagram and stuff going on in the city, it's, you know, Knicks fans, you know, MSG is crazy. They're the wildest fans in the world. So, you know, they have watch parties that are getting shut down because Knicks fans are going a little too nuts. And, you know, rightly so. You know, this is, they're passionate. You know, Knicks fans are passionate. And I'm happy to see these people, you know, get to cheer for this team and, you know, have pride in, you know, in the New York Knicks.
So can Bill and Jenny.
We were actually down in the city a week or so ago when they won outside the Garden, which was just crazy and amazing. So I feel like I've been riding that energy all the way up here.
Yeah, it's so, one of the things we love about it up here, it's so peaceful. That's why we moved here, to kind of get away from the city. But that electricity of, like, it's still your team, you know, so you feel it no matter where you are.
Mike also says that this Knicks team might be here to stay beyond 2026.
I think they really have a good lineup. I think if they just, you know, keep building on the team that they have and ride that momentum, you know, I don't see why not. You know, if they stay clear of injuries and stay healthy, I think they'll be in good shape for next year as well, for sure.
The Knicks hung on for dear life and won Game 2, 105-104, as Spurs star Victor Wembanyama missed a last-second jump shot right at the end. At the time of this recording, the Knicks lead the finals 2-0 and are just 2 wins away from winning their first NBA championship since 1973. Game 3 is tonight at Madison Square Garden.